What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to Talking Transfers from the 90 Min Podcast Network. I'm Toby Cudworth, joined by 90 Min's transfer correspondent and disgruntled Middlesbrough fan, Graham Bailey, and the buoyant Ange Postecoglou, Thomas Frankman, Sean Walsh. Graham, how are you? You went to Ewood Park on Saturday, didn't you, to watch Middlesbrough away, not the result you wanted there, and also not a positive result last night for you either.
I think last night's draw with Sheffield Wednesday was a lot more positive than Saturday. Yeah, it's got a bit of a car crash at the minute. It's they had a really bad transfer window, which didn't help Michael Carrick. The players they brought in were never good enough, and it's last season's promotion charge is looking a distant something in the rear window now. It's going really badly. And my beloved Cleveland Browns lost on Monday night. Lost Nick Chubb to a disgusting tackle from the Pittsburgh Steelers. So it's a horrible week for me so far. Yeah, things can only get better.
On the flip side, Sean, you're riding the crest of a wave, aren't you, as a Spurs fan? You were there on Saturday. How nice was it to go and watch your side, albeit in a work capacity, witness that comeback against Sheffield United? Because you knocked on the door for most of the game, but that's a game you wouldn't have won in years gone by, right?
Yeah, it was just very refreshing, you know. I think Sheffield United did a really good job of defending and slowing the game down. Full credit to them. They came and did their job well for around 98 minutes, but they couldn't do it for 100. And that was ultimately what told in the end. And I think Ange Postecoglou said at a fan forum last night, you know, if teams want to come and they want to play these long, long games, that's fine because Spurs are going to be fitter than a lot of them and they're going to find a way to get through. And the noise in that stadium when Kulusevski scored the winner, I've never heard it so loud. It was unbelievable. It was really, really a great day out.
I think that's the thing I picked up on the most was the atmosphere at Spurs. We've heard all along that stadium was purpose-built to create theatre, to create that buzz. And it's for moments like that. Graham, I presume you've seen the winner and you've heard the reaction from the Spurs fans in the stadium. That's what we want to see in English football, don't we? That cauldron of noise and it really meaning something, even when, no disrespect to Sheffield United, Spurs should be winning that game. But you want to hear that, don't you?
You do. I saw Spurs at Burnley and they were outstanding. They cut through Burnley a lot easier than they did Sheffield United. I did feel for Sheffield United a little bit because, you know, that was never a second yellow for McBurnie, and we don't want to see officiating like that. We'd like to see atmosphere like that, but not officiating like that. But yeah, it was. It's good, and the Ange factor is the real thing. As I said, I saw that at Burnley myself, and you know, and hey, long may it continue. As one of the only people in the 90 Min office to predict Spurs finishing top four, I'm quite happy to see them doing so.
This is only, an admin error.
Only the middle of September. That's what I will say. Very early days. But anyway, the other thing to note from that game was that the longest Premier League game of the season. There was, what, 14, 15 minutes added on? That's the first time we've really seen any lengthy added time.
The latest comeback in Prem history as well.
I thought I'd seen a few 8, 9, 10, 11 minutes, but that might, was that...
This was long.
I thought I'd seen a few of them.
This was almost a 5:30 finish from a 3 o'clock kickoff. That's how late it was. But anyway, we are here for talking transfers. We're going to talk Harry Kane and a clause in the deal that took him to Bayern Munich. We're going to talk some contract activity at Liverpool. We've got Reece James on the menu and his future at Chelsea. We've got Ivan Toney, Martin Odegaard, Aaron Ramsdale, and some other heavy hitters at Arsenal, and some young stars from around the world to discuss as well. But before we get underway, a quick reminder, please, to subscribe to the show on all of your major podcast platforms. And if you want to follow us individually on social, you can do so at Toby_Cudworth, at Graham Bailey, and at Sean DZ Walsh on X. I think we now have to call it X. Twitter is very much in the past. It's at 90min_football across all of the social channels for 90min. And if you want to read the articles that we're about to discuss today on site, we need to go to 90min.com/talking-transfers. So we'll start with Spurs, or a Spurs-related story, Graham. Harry Kane, one of the biggest stories of the summer window, one that eventually saw England's captain move to Bayern Munich for a fee north of 80 million. But details emerging over the past day or so at the time of recording. Spurs chairman Daniel Levy speaking at a fans forum about a clause that was included in the deal to send him to Bayern. Could you just spin us through what he said, first of all, and whether or not there's any substance to a potential return for Kane to North London in the future?
He was just responding to a question at the fans forum, obviously a very happy fans forum. So no one to Daniel Levy and Ange were present. So it's a good time to do a fans forum. He was asked about Harry Kane and he confirmed, yes, we do have a buyback. It was a matter of fact, wasn't he? He was saying, of course we have a buyback. He's a Spurs legend. He was waxing lyrical about Harry Kane. The only break that you would put on this is, remember, these clauses are only worth the paper written on if a player wants to come. Obviously, we presume that Harry Kane would dearly like to return to the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Probably have another name by the time he would come back. But yeah, it has to be for the player to agree as well. I'm told that the clause can change throughout the contract, depends on when it is, what success he's had, what Spurs might do. So it does change. I don't think I've seen some funny memes saying that Daniel Levy will use the clause just as Harry Kane's about to pick up his first trophy, maybe. But yeah, that's not a thing. So yeah, we'll see how it goes. And you know, we always said that before he went, didn't we? And even last year when he was first thing, we said go to Bayern for a couple of years, then come back and break the records at Spurs. And yeah, but although the way Spurs are going, if Son keeps up his running the team, I think you'll see. Sean, I think he'd be lucky to get back in the team if he keeps going under Ange.
This is an interesting point, isn't it, Sean? Spurs have evolved very, very quickly in this post-Kane era. Now, we're probably not talking about this being any kind of reality for at least 2 years, possibly even three or four, given the length of contract Kane signed at Bayern, the success that Bayern are guaranteed over the next few years. You wouldn't imagine he's going to be in a rush to come back. Are Spurs already at a point where it's healthier for the club to move on, clean break, or is it far too early to be having these discussions? We need to see how things play out.
I definitely think it's too early. We have no idea what the future is going to look like 2-3 years. We don't know what Spurs are going to look like next year. We have no idea what Kane's going to look like next year. You know, Kane could very easily just get a really bad injury. It could really derail his physicality. It could, you know, diminish his ability. Spurs could be way into the future. You know, I was joking earlier that Kane could be brought back at the time that Spurs have already won 3 leagues in a row. I don't think that's going to happen, but we can't take it off the table. But yeah, I think that right now, I think Spurs fans have done very well to move on from the saga of Kane. Because I remember in those days where it broke that Kane was going, it was almost like this disbelief. It felt like grief a little bit that someone had died. You know, the best player in the club's history was finally leaving and no one expected him to. But I think in the month or so that's happened, Spurs have done really, really well. And you don't really think about Kane in that sense anymore. I think Spurs fans have got a bit annoyed when Kane was asked the other day about Spurs and he made a point to the Premier League as a whole. Oh, it's a really good competition. I watched that and I hope Spurs do well. But I think that's just, he's super PR trained. He's super media trained. If anything is, every answer he's ever given to any question reads a bit like ChatGPT. But I think you're right. I think Spurs do need to move on a little bit. I could more see it if Kane was in a situation like when Bale came back. So if he's not at his best, but he can come in for a few games, you know, he just wants to come back and have that kind of feel-good return. I don't think that he'll be coming back as the centrepiece of certainly what this Spurs team is going to be about. I can't foresee that, really.
A couple of months ago, it was unfathomable from a Spurs fan's perspective that Harry Kane would leave, right? Looking at it now, I know this is only mid-September. We've had, what, 5-6 weeks of the season. Is this the best thing that could have happened for Ange Postecoglou in particular? Because it's out of the way. There's no discussion about what Harry Kane's going to be doing in January or next summer. Has this been the clean slate that Spurs perhaps needed to get his reign off to the start that he's had?
Yeah, absolutely. I think every year that Kane was here, he came up so many times in press conferences. You know, it was always questions about, is he Spurs' greatest player ever? Is he the Premier League's greatest player ever? When's he going to break Shearer's record? When's he going to break Greaves' record? And then obviously last year it turned more into, is he going to leave? Is he going to stay? And I think when he broke Jimmy Greaves' scoring record against Man City back in February, the feeling that I had was this player and this club are so one and the same that he cannot be allowed to leave, that it would just be a bit pointless that if these two were ever to part. Now I think it's more about Spurs have been able to reinvent themselves as a collective and move away from that. You know, Pep Guardiola joked it was the Harry Kane team a few years ago. They've firmly moved away from that identity now, and I think that's for the greater good. Ange has come in and he's really emphasised the team aspect of this, and I don't think that he would take him back in the next couple of years if Spurs are continuing this trajectory. But, you know, it, like I said at the start, it's way, way too early to really call anything in this.
Graham, from a Bayern perspective and over in Germany, Kane's had a red-hot start. And we know it took Bayern well over a year to replace Robert Lewandowski. Yes, this clause is in the deal, but there's no intimation that Bayern want to move on from Kane in the next 2 or 3 years. He's their long-term striker. From their perspective, they won't be entertaining this as something that's absolutely going to happen in the future. It's just a mechanism to get him back to North London if things fall into place. But they wouldn't have negotiated that deal with allowing Kane to leave in mind, right?
Yeah, it's becoming more of a convention now in England to have these clauses in. You know, we're talking about buybacks, and, you know, we've only really seen it recently. We haven't even seen him enacted in England much. You know, there was Douglas Luiz, who City thought about at one point when he was at Villa. But we will see these used more and more in England, especially, for instance, Aaron Ramsey going to Burnley from Villa, and Cameron Archer, where this is someone Monchi's put those in to use them. If they go to their respective clubs, you will see Villa, them back at Villa very soon. So I think it's something we will see more of. And, you know, it's like the release clause as well. We're just getting used to those in England now, aren't we? We're very much not 10 years behind what they're doing in Spain, but, you know, we're just getting used to these clauses now. They are becoming part of the everyday furniture now in terms of the contracts. And it's something we'll see more and more of. And, yeah, you know, I think it's a nice romantic gesture from Spurs. This, I think they put it in there to, you know, maybe if it was maybe for Kane's good as well. If there's a chance that Harry Kane became unhappy at Bayern and really wanted to leave, there's a clause there to get him out. So it might work on both sides as well. Yeah, but there's not, Bayern are delighted with him. They don't see him leaving anytime soon. And, you know, if he carries on history, he'll be signing an extended deal at Bayern and staying for quite a while. You know, Lewandowski was there till he was 35, was he, or 34, Lewandowski? So still a lot of years to go for Kane in Munich from as we stand.
Just on buyback clause, is it fair to say that Premier League clubs have looked at the example of Barcelona, Real Madrid? You've touched on Monchi there from Sevilla. This is an opportunity for clubs to allow homegrown players to go out, play first team football and develop, and be able to come back and still be a homegrown player in the future. Whereas the pathway has sometimes been blocked by transfer activity. They haven't been able to give the minutes to these kids. And perhaps they've looked at this and thought, this is a way that we can help nurture, develop talent, help even the national team to an extent, get these players playing first team football at a younger age, but still have that protection to be able to integrate them into their first team at some point in the future, like Real and Barcelona have done so often.
Oh, yeah, I think it's essential. You know, I think the success of the English team, personally, it's nothing to do with Gareth Southgate. It's the likes of Man City, Chelsea, etc. It's their academies that they're ploughing. The Football Association aren't ploughing millions of pounds into these academies. It's the clubs, and we should be very thankful for it. You know, it's them who are providing these talents for English football. It's the millions of pounds that the City, I said, just City, Chelsea, Liverpool are putting in. But also what I would say with these buyback clauses, Toby, they have huge sell-on fees as well. They're going hand in hand with these as well. So yeah, all these deals like a Cole Palmer or the Chelsea letting all their players go, like a Loftus-Cheek said, they have huge selling fees. So it's part of their system is to let these players go. You know, there's no blockage in the system, especially at City. You know, if a player's ready to go, he goes out. Same as Chelsea and getting players out there. And there's ways and means of doing it. You know, there's the multi-club ownership as well, but this is another way of doing it. And the buyback with the huge sell-on clause. Yeah, it's just part of the business now.
Interesting stuff. One player who is a homegrown talent who could be in line for a new contract, Trent Alexander-Arnold, Graham at Liverpool. Obviously one of Liverpool's... Is it fair to say he's one of their greatest fullbacks ever already at this stage? He's only 23, 24, but he's achieved so much in the game already and looks like he will achieve so much more in the future. He's in line for a new contract, Graham, to ward off some interest from elsewhere. He's not the only Liverpool player, though, is he?
No, he's one in last decade. He's probably their greatest homegrown product. I think we forget he has come through the ranks there, and I think Liverpool don't get the credit sometimes they deserve for, you know, producing talent such as him. In terms of the best fullback, yeah, I can go back to Rob Jones here. I'm sure you do, Toby, as well. He was a very good player, but he wasn't a homegrown product. Obviously, he came from the mighty crew Alexander at the time. Yeah, he's only 24 as well. You know, like nearly 300 games he's played. It's a fabulous achievement, and England are very, very lucky because, you know, you got to feel for chat a little bit. If Reece James wasn't there, he'd be locked into that right back position, wouldn't he? And for years to come. Yeah, there is interest in Trent from abroad. You know, Real Madrid need a long-term solution at right back, and you could see Trent and Reece James, who will come on to as well, is a player they're tracking as well. Big clubs track these good players, and these are two of the best fullbacks in the world football. I know Trent gets a lot of stick, but you know he has to play in the Premier League, which is arguably probably that I would argue is the hardest league for a fullback to play. You know, they really are pinned back a lot of the times. The other wing is going at them really, really difficultly. I like Trent. I do. I think he's had a hard time. But yeah, and Liverpool are going to reward him. He's going to end up on £250,000 a week. Similar deal to what Reece James signed earlier in the year. He'll be one of the highest paid players at Liverpool. He's not looking to leave Trent. He's a real part of the furniture there. But I say only 24. So you can sign this deal and then maybe look elsewhere. But yeah, his current deal only has till 2025 to run, so less than 2 years. And Liverpool really just don't want it to get into that final 18 months, which if we got to January, it would be the last 18 months of his contract. So Liverpool are determined to get there. Talks are going well, and they don't see any issues with this. But yeah, they'll be tying him down, along with his teammate Tsimikas. Kostas Tsimikas, the Greek boy, who I actually like, and he's come in from Olympiacos. He is Andrew Robertson's understudy, but he has played. You know, he comes in when you see him. He's a very, very good player, and they're going to hand him a 2-year extension to 2027. They love him. He's played nearly 100 times since he arrived. He's seemingly happy being a squad man, which is the ideal thing, isn't it? For when you bring someone in a high caliber squad player like this, who, you know, he would probably play. I don't know what you guys think. I think Tsimikas would probably start for quite a lot of very good teams. He's a very good player. But yeah, he's been persuaded to stay as Andrew Robertson's backup. So yeah, two of their fullbacks are going to sign long-term deals. So good forward planning from Liverpool, really.
This is needed for Liverpool, isn't it, Sean? They've had a lot of turnover in the summer, albeit in midfield. Trent Alexander-Arnold, he strikes me as a player who could be a one-club player throughout his entire career, stays at Liverpool. Certainly be good enough to start at right back. Could even transition into that defensive midfield role in the future. We'll see how that plays out. But as Graham says, Kostas Tsimikas, he's not a bad player at all, is he? He's no Andrew Robertson, but He's done a good job for Liverpool for the most part when he's been drafted into the side. And you need that depth to be able to compete, both at domestic level, but to challenge. Liverpool will hope this season that they're going to push to win the Europa League and in future years get back into the Champions League mix.
Yeah, I was nodding along with everything that Graham said there. I really like Tsimikas. Whenever he comes in, you know, you don't see clangers from him. He doesn't get absolutely pasted by the winger that he's up against. He's a very good, solid player. He has a very iconic moment in scoring that winning a penalty in the FA Cup final. Just you need those players in your squad. So it's really handy for Liverpool that they can have someone who is clearly a backup, but he's fine with that. He's fine with just the privilege of that. He can come in and out. It's fine. And then, yeah, with Trent, the football romantic in me wants player like that to stay with one club forever. I think I said earlier on a few pods ago, when Chelsea were looking to maybe offload Gallagher and some of their other academy players, I thought it's a really sad state of affairs that FFP was being used as like the academy players to ease the burden there rather than keep these players and have a bit of pride in these players coming through the system. You know, I think was it Kwanzaa who made his full debut at the weekend for Liverpool, first start? He's been there since the age of 5, I think it was. That's a real kind of source of pride. You want your club to bring through these players who have these long associations. So I think the longer Trent's there, the better it is for football. And you mentioned it as well. You do forget sometimes that he is a homegrown hero, and he has achieved so much. You know, a few years ago, he probably was a few years ago the best right back in the world. Maybe not so now, but he's in that caliber of player. If he was to move, it would be huge, huge news. So good for Liverpool to try and tie him down while they can.
A few raised eyebrows earlier this summer, wasn't there, Graham, when Alexander-Arnold was made Liverpool's vice-captain, but he's future captain material, isn't he?
He is, yeah. Obviously, the captain debate has caused issues at Liverpool. We know that. We spoke previously about Salah, who did want it. He was overlooked. But yeah, I think Trent is, he is a future captain. No doubting that. Following the footsteps. And, you know, I think, I imagine they would have thought long and hard about giving him it now. You know, but I think because he's 24, but he would have followed in the footsteps, wouldn't he? Carragher, Gerrard. I think I'd have been tempted to get to him, to be honest. I bet it was in the conversation. Obviously, he's vice captain, so he would have been in the conversation. And Liverpool are probably blessed. You know, some teams, you know, we struggle. Like, look at Man United, who is the captain in their team? But when you look at Liverpool, there's quite a few who stand up there saying, yeah, do you know what I mean? You could see them with the armband for a lot of years to come. And what I do find it fascinating, guys, is the terms of these contracts. So Tsimikas is up in 2025, same as Alexander-Arnold. They're giving him a two-year extension. That is how you work a football club, isn't it? They're not giving Trent, hey, if not giving an eight-year contract, like some other clubs, we know who we're talking about. And Tsimikas, not just giving him an eight-year contract or something. You know, it's a keeping the value when they do it. And I think Liverpool are one of the clubs who haven't really, if you think about it, I was just thinking now off the top of my head, Liverpool haven't been caught with many of these players who are under contract when they don't want them to be, as some of the clubs we've seen. Obviously, I think they got a little bit lucky with Fabinho this summer, but even still, he was out of contract next year, I think, and Thiago's out of contract. Thiago's one who would say, yeah, do you know what? If he had 3 or 4 years left on his contract, he'd be a real issue. But he's out of contract next summer. So I think you can't underestimate how well some of these clubs are managed. I know Liverpool fans, FSG, have issues, but they're handling their contract issues very well at the minute.
Well, Liverpool considered Alexander-Arnold for the captaincy, perhaps. Over in London, Chelsea did make one of their homegrown players captain. Reece James signed a new long-term contract. I believe it was earlier this year, Graham, but I lose track of time, such as the nature of the business that's done. But the noise hasn't really gone away that Reece James is on the shopping list of Real Madrid. That was a link that first emerged prior to him signing his new contract. He's obviously signed that. He's Chelsea's captain now. He's in it for the long haul. But the chatter isn't going away. Can you just walk us through, has anything changed from Reece James's perspective, given Chelsea's struggles? I pointed out to Sean and a couple of the guys yesterday, Chelsea's form this year is the second worst of any team who's been in the Premier League, bar Everton. Take the relegated clubs out of the equation. They've only won 5 games this year. Is that a concern for Reece James, or is he as committed as he ever was?
At the moment, it isn't a concern to him. You know, And you know, it's a strange one at Chelsea because he's looking around. He probably looks around the squad with the Enzos, the Casidos, and the like, Levi Caldwell. And he thinks, John, there is a bones of a Champions League team there. Of course there is. We know that. And I think Reece James sees himself as part of that. He can't help the links. You know, Real Madrid, his good friend Antonio Rudiger there, no doubt he's having a word in the ear, because Real Madrid do need another right back. They brought the boy, was it Young Diaz? Fran Garcia came back, didn't he, in the summer? But, you know, we don't see, he's more of a squad man. Danny Carvajal is still there, which I think they're a bit behind the times here, Real Madrid. I think they would have liked someone. They looked at Fresneda, who went to Dortmund, but they weren't fully convinced by him. Even Nacho's still there. So they do need cover it right back. And, you know, if you are Real Madrid and you are Florentino Perez telling Wanny Califat, go and get me a right back, then it's no surprise, is it, that Reece James and Trent Alexander-Arnold are in the conversation. You know, we can only imagine, guys, what these two would be like in that team. They would be pretty amazing, really. And I think James especially would be such a wonderful fit at that club. But at the moment, no. And Real Madrid, you know, they're going to keep asking the question every few months, once a year, twice a year. Is he happy? Yeah, he is. So at the moment, nothing's going to happen. But if they see a chink of light there, they'll make a move. But no, as it stands, Reece James is very happy at Chelsea. He wants to turn them into a force again. There's a real project at Chelsea now. And I think some of the... Pochettino is really getting that squad together in terms of battening down the hatches. You know, win this together, have to come through. And I think Poch needs, I think he's telling the players he needs number two windows to get this right, really. He's going to have more say on the transfers. And that's where Reece James is. I can't see him being dropped anytime soon. You know, hopefully he'll be back from his injuries pretty soon. But no, I think, you know, it's no surprise to see Real Madrid linked to Toby. But no, Reece James is very, very happy at Chelsea, and he isn't going anywhere anytime soon.
It feels a lot like the Real Madrid link goes back to when Chelsea played them in the Champions League in 21-22, when they played in the quarterfinals. Mm-hmm. It went to extra time after Chelsea made that great comeback. He was really, really good at the Bernabeu, I have to say. I think he did a really good job up against Vinicius. And it feels like one of those things where if you're a big name, up-and-coming name, you go to Real Madrid, you have a really, really good match. You will inevitably be linked to them forever. They'll start talking about Real Madrid DNA. And Toby, you know, we do the transfer rumour roundup every morning. The amount of times I see the Madrid press linking Reece James with a move to the Bernabeu,
it's always a telling sign.
You know? Yeah, it's always a telling sign. So I think that, you know, the interest is definitely there. I would like to
Do you think it's a matter of time before this guy, he's played virtually everywhere apart from in goal, it's a matter of time before we see them try Valverde at right back?
Wouldn't be surprised. He's the ultimate utility man, isn't he?
He is so good, isn't he? And he could play there, couldn't he? He's so good.
It's the only position Real Madrid haven't really got any depth to it. You've already said it there, Graham, but they are stacked in central midfield. They are stacked in forward areas. Valverde is good enough, particularly in games where Real Madrid are favourites to win. He's clearly got the engine. He's got the technical ability. He's got the defensive nous. He could play there. So I wouldn't be surprised if Carlo Ancelotti does do that at some point. Let's just cycle back to Chelsea very quickly. Sean, Mauricio Pochettino in there, he's got a massive job on his hands, hasn't he? And they've not got off to the start that many fans hoped they would. I think there was a clamour and a real hope that he would turn things around instantly. The same old problem. They're not really creating chances. They're not looking too threatening. They need a goal threat, and that kind of leans into the next player that we're going to discuss. Ivan Toney, not currently playing for Brentford because of his ban. He is back in training, but we won't see him until January. How do you assess where Chelsea are currently at, Sean? And then the Ivan Toney links, quite obvious, aren't they? Santiago Jimenez from Feyenoord also on Chelsea's agenda. Just spin us through where we are.
Yeah, so I think the problem with Chelsea right now is they still feel a bit too much like a Potter team, you know. They make chances, but they're more half chances than clear-cut chances. They still don't have that natural goal-scoring centre-forward. I think we spoke before about they should have just probably just gone and got Osimhen if he was there for them. The defence is okay, but...
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Conceding a couple goals here and there where they probably shouldn't, so it's really teething problem for them. So it's a slow burner. I personally don't think that a club with the pressures of Chelsea can do the youth project that Todd Boehly can want, but that's up for him to decide. The links to Ivan Toney, legitimate. Chelsea do hold some kind of interest. They are weighing up a move, and Brentford would be willing to sell for the right price. Thomas Frank went on Monday Night Football earlier this week. He said, you know, everyone's got a price. We are a selling club. I think that maybe would be the right time for Brentford to move on, because I think they've started the season quite well without Toney. They've proven in the last year or so that they can play without Toney. If they were to get that big fee, they can go and spend it on a couple of other areas where they can improve. I think there is a real ambition from them to get into Europe over the next couple of years after the year they had last year. And it makes sense for Chelsea, I think. I think if you were to compare Toney to anyone, it probably would be Didier Drogba. And Chelsea need that kind of charisma that Toney would bring, that confidence in front of goal, that focal point. Because I think Nicholas Jackson could be a good striker in the future, but I think he's just too raw and playing with a lot of pressure right now to really do that.
Graham, you're not sure on that link, Toney and Drogba? You pulled a slightly funny face when Sean said that. What do you see?
Not as good, Toney? But that, the similar that's kind the... of profile.
I think he's probably nearer to Didier Drogba as he is now than when he was in his booth. Didier Drogba was a world-class centre-forward. Ivan Toney is not a world-class centre-forward, as much as he thinks he is. I like Ivan Toney, I do. I think Sean sees him more than me, rates him higher than I do. And he's a good Premier League player, but I just don't think he's what Chelsea needs. Chelsea needs something better than that. I do here, keep getting linked, and he's injured now, but keep an eye on Tammy Abraham, possible return there. And I think he's better than Toney personally. Not much in it, granted. But I just think that Chelsea just need that top-class number 9. Nicholas Jackson, bless him. Pochettino, he has to back this signing that's come in. But some of these signings that Chelsea have made, I do worry about the recruitment. You know, Jackson, to be fair, we said if he was the number 2 striker, yeah, fine. But if he's leading the line, I think I said in my predictions, you know, if he's starting the season, I'd have Chelsea at the top 8. And it's things like Axel Di Sassi coming in. Is he better than what they had? You know, I know Chalabar's injured, but he's not better than Trevor Chalabar. It's an accident waiting to happen. Some of this recruitment by Chelsea, I love some of the recruitment. I love Enzo. I love Caicedo. But some of it is just so haphazard. I don't think they've learned the lessons. I really don't. You know, they came in this summer, and I think we said on the show, when we were talking about what clubs need, Chelsea needed a goalkeeper, and they needed a number 9. Yeah, and the midfielders, fair enough. They did need to sort the midfield out, and arguably they have. But number 9 and goalkeeper, they haven't addressed. I think it reminds me a bit of the Man U window where they suddenly changed the targets later on and had an abysmal window. And Chelsea obviously didn't have an abysmal window because they've got Caicedo, they've got Labia, who will prove to be top-class players for them. But not getting that extra number 9 in. So, you know, Pochettino's a good manager, but he's not a miracle worker.
I wrote a piece after Chelsea lost at home to Nottingham Forest just before the international break where basically the crux of it was it feels a lot like Chelsea are trying to be Brighton. And, you know, Chelsea do have a lot of people who were at Brighton there. And I think it's so hard to do when the pressures are so different. You know, my colleague Scott Saunders, he preaches a lot on Twitter that it's different when you're at Brighton. There is no spotlight. There is no pressure, there's no expectation, you can kind of almost freely go about your business a little bit more. It's different at Chelsea, it's a completely different world, and I think that is why they're going to continue to struggle regardless of who the manager is.
Do we think Ivan Toney would be suitable then for that kind of pressure? He's delivered for Brentford in the 3 seasons that he's been there, scored 31 championship goals when they went up. I think he scored 20 Premier League goals last season. His goal record suggests that he is operating at the top level. So you can understand why Chelsea would like him, but could he handle that big move in either of your estimations? I don't mind who goes first. And also, can I just try and put a figure on what you think Ivan Toney is worth in this current market, given what he has achieved in the last couple of years. What would Chelsea need to pay to get him out?
I think it depends where Chelsea are in the if things improve for Chelsea, and he's to see him as that final. Say if they're battling for top four, and they think, John, what? Let's just get Toney in the door, and he can fire his stuff off. I think it'll depend on where they are. You know, if they're languishing in mid table, I'd say, oh, we'll wait till someone maybe go for an Osimhen. Don't get me wrong, I think Toney's a huge upgrade on what they've got. He would be a huge upgrade on anything from Brozier for Jackson. Brozier and Jackson, you know, barely Premier League standard, in my opinion. So he would be a huge upgrade on what they've got. He really would. And you can see Toney desperate for that. No, Toney, from where he is now, if Toney gets a move to Chelsea and does well, he's going to the Euros from nowhere. So he would be desperate for this. You know, in terms of cost, I think what Brentford ask will be dependent on how desperate the buyer is, and if it's Chelsea, and they'll be hoping it's Chelsea, because as we know, you can get some money out of Chelsea.
Well, Frank did say on Monday Night Football, he made a point that you look at the amount of money the midfielders are going for. I do think that he was thinking about Chelsea in mind when he said this, and he said the strikers are the most important because they get you the goals. So I do think that Brentford will. You're right; they'll bump that price right up.
Do you think this period of Brentford not having Ivan Toney, Sean, is going to be key to how high they go in terms of their price? If they can prove for 6 months that they're capable of mixing in the Premier League without Ivan Toney, and they can reinvest that money Brighton style, that's kind of what Brentford want to do, right? They want to maybe bring two or three players in with the money that they could generate from Toney. Maybe a sale actually wouldn't be a bad thing for them in the long run either.
Yeah, I think so. And they've swung and missed on a few key transfer targets where they've been quoted maybe 45, 50 million and they won't go that high. So I think selling Toney for a big fee would give them the flexibility to do that. So I do think that that's in their thinking, that if we can continue as a team, and I do think they believe in what they have as a team now, that is why they didn't go and sign another striker. But if they were to lose Toney permanently, they would have a succession plan in place and I think they would be able to move forward.
Okay, well, let's keep the Brentford link going. We're going to discuss Arsenal. Sean, I'm going to come to you first. David Raya was in goal at the weekend for Arsenal's 1-0 win over Everton. Joined from Brentford earlier this summer. Ousted Aaron Ramsdale to the surprise of many. Mikel Arteta saying it's part of rotation, that he doesn't really have a fixed number one goalkeeper. This was always the plan. And that he may even go as far as substituting his goalkeepers within matches, something that we never see. In terms of Aaron Ramsdale, noise that he might look to leave Arsenal because of this. I think many people saying that he expected to be Arsenal's number one, that situation wouldn't change with David Raya. But obviously Arteta's comments suggest that that may not be the case moving forward. What's our understanding of how Aaron Ramsdale's feeling right now? We've seen links to Chelsea. Graham's spoken about their need for a goalkeeper and elsewhere. But is there any substance to this yet?
We believe right now that Ramsdale is determined to stay and fight for his place. He's not looking to leave Arsenal. That could change if, you know, it gets to January and Raya has started every game and he's firmly the number one. But it does sound like Aaron Ramsdale is committed to Arsenal right now. I would be a little bit worried if I was him, because I think Arteta is crazy enough to do the substitute a goalie thing. I think that there's something in that. But I do think it is also a bit of lip service. He's trying to kind of take the sting out of it, because it is a story when you do drop your goalkeeper. Of course it is. And I think Raya, you know me, I've been on here for months and I've waxed lyrical about Raya. I think one of the underrated things that I didn't consider before is in that Everton game, how much calmer Arsenal did look. They weren't worried about the goalie behind them doing something silly, which Ramsdale can do from time to time, as much as he is a good goalkeeper. But I think Raya just brings a bit more kind of, you know what you're getting with him. You don't get that unpredictability and, you know, the situation could change. But it does sound like Ramsdale for now is committed to Arsenal.
Graham, did Ramsdale deserve to be dropped? Very good last season, albeit he did make a couple of mistakes playing out from the back, but Arsenal went close in the Premier League title race. Were you surprised that he was dropped, or did you see this coming?
I was surprised it happened when it did, you know, once they've signed Raya. Interesting. You know, I think Arteta's is not doing the right thing by Ramsdale. Ramsdale didn't deserve to be dropped. I know what Sean's saying about Raya, where he's a different type of keeper at Ramsdale. Bit calmer, you know. Ramsdale's a very passionate man, but I don't think he's warranted losing his spot. And yeah, I think Arteta's caused an issue here, which he didn't need to. And we'll see how it plays out. You know, from what we're told by people close to Ramsdale, as myself and Sean to the piece, he's settled at the moment. But if he's not Arsenal number one come January, you know, he's going to be worried about his England spot, etc. You know, he's earned one of the first few caps recently. And yeah, it's a tough one. It really is. I think he was in goal for Arsenal. Did he make that many mistakes? I think Ramsdale's a better shot stopper, but Rea's better with his feet. It's a bit like the United situation. What suits Arsenal better? And there is that argument, and I can see it, where Rea probably does suit the Arsenal style better. So I can see why he's doing that. Will it become a thing that you maybe interchange your goalkeepers? Why not? I guess, you know, there's no one else. If Haaland can be rotated out at City, then why can't anyone else in any other team? So Arteta might be seeing this, you know, the intense pressure on a goalkeeper for every single game, having to play 90 minutes and concentrate. You can see why Arteta might be doing it. He might be ahead of the curve here, really. So we'll have to see how it plays out. It's one that, if it does happen, that Ramsdale would have to get used to in Rea as well. But yeah, we'll see how it plays out. It wouldn't surprise me if Rea does become number one as of now, next few weeks. But we'll see. Champions League, important games. We'll see where it goes. But yeah, he's happy at the moment, but it won't stay that way if he's not number one.
Well, it certainly would have been less of a story if Arteta had done it for the Champions League game against PSV, because I think many would have expected that to be the time to rotate his goalkeeper, and then Raya could have kept his place. But he's chosen to go the way that he has. We'll see how that develops. Other Arsenal news, Graham, in terms of new contracts, I think the headline story here is Martin Odegaard. Arsenal looking to tie him down, but not the only one, is he?
No, Arsenal are moving through the squad. There has been murmurs about Arteta as well, but I think they're not really worried about that. That'll come to pass when they need to with Arteta. I think Arteta sees him there, sort of there for a long time. Odegaard is close. You know, he's the captain. Still think hugely underrated in terms of the Premier League, but he's a quiet man, isn't he? Doesn't make the headlines necessarily. Similar to De Bruyne, really, for me. I think he's an absolute worldy of a player. I really do think he is. His new deal is very close, we're told. Crossing a few T's, dotting a few I's. Also talks going on with Ben White and Zinchenko as well. But Arsenal doing things the right way. Both of them two looking like extensions, both playing really well. Ben White especially. Zinchenko, yeah, he's been a bit up and down, hasn't he? But yeah, he'll be rewarded with a new deal as well. And so, yeah, Arsenal keeping their squad tied down. And yeah, Odegaard will be first, and we wouldn't be surprised to see White and Zinchenko follow pretty quickly after that.
Would you expect to see Ben White pushing for more England minutes, Sean, in the future?
Yeah, I think it must. His continued admission, it must be an off-field thing, because I do think that Ben White is probably one of the more underrated defenders in the league. I thought he was near enough flawless in a lot of the games for Arsenal last season. I think he doesn't get enough credit from outsiders, I think. So I would like to see him come into the fold again. I think he's got that kind of almost John Stones versatility. So if England could learn up on those kind of players, that's really great. And I think this is a great deal for Arsenal to be able to... We're talking over about Liverpool, you know, the savvy deals to keep their best players tied down. It feels a lot like Arsenal are moving into that kind of bracket of smart, savvy club.
It's a strange one, isn't it? Because Southgate doesn't have that excuse, guys. Just keep saying, oh, Ben White, yeah, he's playing right back. I haven't seen him at centre-half. You know,
yeah.
Well, you don't see Harry Maguire at centre-half. He's still picking him. So,
yeah.
But I think because that's where, for England, that's where he plays, isn't it? Because we've got four right-backs, literally four players ahead of him for England, which is rightfully Trippier, Walker, James and Trent. But Ben White, if you put him centrally, arguably should be ahead of Matt Gibb, possibly. You know, Ben White, I think he's been very, very unlucky.
Might be an example of positional versatility actually working against a player. Because don't forget, Ben White first broke through at Leeds playing a defensive midfield, right? And then he went back into the back line, has now excelled at right back. Maybe if he was playing centre-back at Arsenal, he might have more of a chance of getting in that England squad. But we shall see.
A case of Southgate favouritism, which he's entitled to. You know, if you don't, he's England manager. You know, he has his trusted players. And I think that's as Sean said, really, he's on form. He warrants being in there. I just think it's a case of Southgate not particularly rating him, really.
Just going to throw one more line in about a new contract, a quick iron in the fire. Jared Bowen, West Ham trying to tie him down to a new contract. Another player out of contract, Graham, in 2025. That's the deal that he signed when he joined West Ham in January 2020, when West Ham were fighting relegation. He's one of the Premier League's most consistent players. And I was actually astonished when I did the story with you. He's only missed two Premier League games for West Ham in the entire time that he's been with the club. So he is always fit. That's 130 games that he's played. Goal return pretty good for a West Ham side who are now in Europe for the third consecutive season. He's got interest in him, hasn't he, Graham? Do you think this is going to be a factor in whether or not he puts pen to paper? West Ham hopeful that he does and probably wants to tie him down for, what, 4 or 5 years. But how do you see this one going? Is there potentially a chink in this?
There is. He's quite close to a new deal, what we're told. Talks are ongoing. But as we know, he's a player who Jurgen Klopp has spoken about, you know, since for quite a while now. As you know, Toby, he likes him. And West Ham probably relieved to see Mo Salah not go to Saudi Arabia in the last window. Because when you think about it, Liverpool, yeah, they're well stocked. But I imagine that Jared Bowen is very, very high up. And I'm told he is. Well, I know he is. He's very high up on Liverpool's list as a Salah replacement. And he would be an app. When you think about all the players in even in world football, Jared Bowen would be an ideal replacement for Mo Salah at Liverpool. In terms of the cost, in terms of the age profile, in terms of where he works. Yeah, if I was West Ham, yeah, I'd be getting him tied down. And what they are trying to do, they are trying to get him tied down before January. If I was Jared Bowen, I'd be waiting to see what happens to Mo Salah in that January window, personally. If he's on his bike to Saudi Arabia and Liverpool have got a lot of money to spend, yeah, it's a really interesting situation for Jared Bowen. He signs a new deal at West Ham. It's a tough one at West Ham, you know, because, you know, David Moyes, no sign of a new deal for him anytime soon, Toby. So that might, but if he thinks Moyes is leaving, it might inspire him to sign a new deal. But it's a fascinating, yeah, Jared Bowen, West Ham are a really fascinating club at the minute, even with your irons in the fire. I mean, I think they're fascinating to look ahead to see what comes of this. But yeah, I think it's essential for West Ham to get Jared Bowen tied down.
Sure, and it's quite extraordinary, his fitness record, isn't it? Given the amount of games that have been played in that time, we had COVID hit, then loads of games in sort of 3-4 months to get that season done. We've crammed a World Cup in. Bowen's got into the England squads in that period. West Ham have played loads of times in Europe. Bowen scoring the winner in the final against Fiorentina earlier this year. Is he underrated? Is it strange to say that he's underrated?
A little bit, yeah. I hadn't actually thought about the Mo Salah comparison before, but he does have that same kind of jink. He has that, he can just stop, start very well on the ball. He can just kind of pick his spot from anywhere within 18 yards. I understand that why he is would be so in demand, because you're right, that fitness record, that is, I didn't know that. But you've got to imagine that a club like Liverpool, who do play a lot of these games, who do play a high-pressing, high-octane style, they would very much be interested in that. I always assumed that he would be someone that Newcastle would go after this summer. But I always thought that they needed a player like that, a player who's ready to make that next kind of leap, and they need another right winger. I was really surprised that they didn't go for him. But yeah, I think, no offence, Toby, but I think he probably should hold off on signing a contract.
Well, fingers crossed, the fact that he's had twins this year, hopefully he's settled. In East London, from my perspective, he does put pen to paper.
On the stop Harry Kane going.
If father-in-law is a die-hard hammer, yeah, maybe that.
Absolutely.
His father-in-law, Mr. Obi, in his ear to keep him.
Hopefully, a little word in his ear to point him in the right direction. We're going to finish off the show with a few players from abroad, Graham. Valentin Barco, a young player that Brighton, known for identifying talent in South America, getting them on the cheap, Moises Caicedo and Alexis McAllister, the two obvious examples I can give you. Brighton like him, but not alone, are they? Lots of Premier League clubs have woken up to this strategy of buying players at source, the thing that we've been saying for months. Who's in pole position for this lad? Anybody at this stage?
Brighton, if anyone, because they've spoken to the player's agent and not a million miles from a deal. And they can speak directly to him because he does have a release clause. $10 million, £8 million at the current exchange rate. He's a fabulous player. He's only made the breakthrough this season, but he's been a big part of this Boca team who are in the Copa Libertadores semi-finals. And where they're going to play Palmeiras later this month and next month. Yeah, Brighton are advanced in there. They like him a lot. We're also told Chelsea, Man City, Newcastle, Brentford, Wolves and Forest have all watched him in recent weeks. He can play anywhere down the left. He can also play in the middle. He's a really fabulous talent. Celtic, Bayer Leverkusen, Borussia Dortmund, Benfica, Porto, Roma, Juventus, PSG, Monaco have also checked him as well. He really is a fabulous player. Boca, for their part, though, they are hoping to tie him down to a new deal. They want him to stay. He's only 19, and they're hoping to make him one of their highest-paid players in their squad, which some of these South Americans do let them go because they know they're making money, but Boca really want this guy to stay. They're hoping that the Copa Libertadores run will inspire him to stay at Boca. So it's an interesting one. We'll keep an eye on this one as it goes. They're playing Palmeiras, and it'll be fascinating to watch to see that game. But the stands for those games will be packed full of scouts. And if I was a Premier League fan, I'd be watching these Copa Libertadores semi-finals. There's Andre Fluminense, the Liverpool target as well. Lots of players who have interested in Premier League clubs. And obviously, he isn't a full Argentine international, but this is where the new leagues and the Premier League rules come in. You don't have to meet that limit anymore. So before Barco, he would have been of interest to Premier League, but they knew they couldn't bring him in because he didn't qualify. Now under the new Brexit rules, these Premier League clubs can get him and they are queuing up to get him. So really fascinating, but a very good player.
Also a quick line, Graham, on Fabrizio Diaz. Brighton liked him, a Uruguay midfielder, 20 years old. Barcelona liked him, but he's gone down the route of Manuel Lanzini many moons ago. He's gone to Qatar.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Qatar came very late in the window, but they suddenly splashed the money on a few players. Marco Verratti went there. And now this young 20-year-old was Uruguay under 20 captain. He's gone to Al Garafa. Barcelona very keen. Brighton, again, were looking at him. A lot of teams considered him. Atalanta, Marseille, Seville, Berlin as well. Chelsea, Liverpool, Man United also looked at him. He's 20, so... You know, this is a guy who, not quite like the guy at Boca, I should say, he was potential first team material. So that's why it did surprise a lot of Premier League teams. But from his point of view, I spoke to sources close to the players saying, well, the teams didn't put an offer on the plate. They didn't put anything in front of him, and the Qataris did. So the expectation is it'll probably stay in Qatar for a couple of years and then pre-World Cup in 2026. He'll be heading to Europe. So yeah, a bit of a Manuel Lanzini, as you say, Toby. We've seen a few of these players, a few youngsters go to the Middle East, and with the Saudi Pro League, I think this in Qatar, I think we'll see this happening a bit more. As you say, Toby, now rather than paying these huge fees when these players are in Europe, you go to source. So this is a bit of a worry. This is one that I spoke to a few Premier League teams. They're a bit worried, not really by Qatar so much, but a little bit, but by Saudis ready to raid South America, getting these players where there is still real value to be had. There's not many places in the world where Premier League clubs can get value, but South America is still one of those places.
Interesting stuff. We're going to finish with an old podcast favourite. I think we first started talking about this guy, 18 months ago? Hugo Ekitike, Graham. Newcastle, firstly, a long time ago. West Ham, Crystal Palace more recently. He's at PSG, went there after a really red-hot season in Ligue 1. Didn't really get a chance, did he, last season? Let's be honest. Was linked with a move away this summer. Didn't happen. The links are still there. What's the situation?
Yeah, my understanding is it's been a bit close to his camp. He's going to give it a go at PSG. He's going to try and impress Luis Enrique. His problem is that he's seen the likes of Goncalo Ramos, Bradley Barcola, and Randall Colomwani all come in. And it's going to look like a tough slog for him to get into the team. Obviously, PSG wanted him to go to Frankfurt as part of the Colomwani deal. Didn't happen. He rejected that. And then he had talk strange. It was a strange one. He was being linked to West Ham for a lot of window. West Ham were interested, Toby. But Crystal Palace came late on deadline day trying to get him on loan. But as it stands, there isn't talks going on with the English clubs. The English clubs are keeping in touch to let know the situation. Palace amongst them, West Ham amongst them, Brentford, who Sean will be interested. I could see him at Brentford. You know, I think he's that type of player who they could take a gamble on. Only 21. Wolves, Everton, money. Exactly, Sean. I think Ekitike, which I know you love, Toby, is a player we'll be talking a lot about in the coming months ahead of his January window. But at the moment, he's going to try and make a breakthrough. He's a talented boy, so who's to say he won't make a breakthrough under Luis Enrique? But if he doesn't play up to November, December time, that's when we'll start seeing these clubs making their moves. He's going to be available on loan as well, which is a big thing. We know Premier League clubs love a loan. So yeah, I think there'll be a bit of a battle on for him. There is interest back in his homeland as well. Leon Lenz, even former club Stade Reims like him as well, but it depends where they are in the league in terms of that. I wouldn't be surprised to see German interest as well. So we'll see where we are. We'll keep an eye on Hugo Ekitike, but for the moment, for the next 2 months, he's going to try and impress Luis Enrique. So we'll have to keep an eye on that and see where it goes. But yeah, we're going to be talking about it. It wouldn't surprise me to see him in the Premier League in January.
We'll just round that story off then, Sean, by saying Brentford liked him. Do you think they might try and bring a forward in January, depending on what happens with Tony? Haven't really got the best out of Kevin Schade, have they? He's been on the bench quite a lot. I'm not really sure he's going to make much of an impression at Brentford. It might be time for Thomas Frank to look to bring somebody else in. But Johan Wiss has had quite a good start to the season, hasn't he? Brian and Mbeumo playing very well.
This is harsh. Schade reminds me a bit of Rutter at Leeds. Is that a bit harsh?
A little bit. I think Schade is... I think that he is a winger, not a number nine. But I think Frank said that he thinks he's a number nine. I don't think that at all. I do think that Brentford need another physical presence like a Tony. And I think Wisser is better coming off the bench when you need another goal. So I wouldn't be surprised if they went for a more... not that physical, but he's definitely tall. Mm. So I think... makes a bit of sense there. And if they could play Schade and Mbeumo out wide, then I think that makes a bit more sense.
Did Brentford regret Sean? I was just looking at his stats. He's had a great start to his season at Sporting. Brentford should have gone for Guy Carver, shouldn't they?
I did. I saw a compilation of his match of the weekend. He looked formidable. It was making me think, that would have been the Tony replacement right there, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Well, Ivan Tony will be back in January, so expect him to probably have a Brentford shirt on until the end of the season. It'd be hard to see a January move happening, but we'll wait and see. Graham, Sean, thanks very much for your time today. Quick reminder for you listeners to please subscribe to the show if you haven't already. You can do so on all of your major podcast platforms. And if you want to follow us individually on social media, you can do so at Toby_Cudworth, at Graham Bailey and at Sean DZ Walsh. At 90min_football for all of our social channels as a brand, and 90min.com/talkingtransfers if you want to read any of the articles on site. But until next week, guys, thanks very much for listening. Graham and Sean, thanks very much for your time, and we'll see you soon.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.